Hi, everyone, and welcome to Tapped into Psychedelics. I'm your host, Adam Tapp, and with me is my friend and producer, Handsome Jason. And this episode is sponsored by Avail Scientific. And today's guest is Dr. Trina Nguyen. And Trina is a pharmacist, and Trina's a very interesting person. And so I've had many conversations with her, and I think that it's a very valuable conversation that we're about to have. So, Trina, how are you doing? And tell us about yourself.
Hello. Oh, well, thank you for that warm welcome. And Adam, of course, well, you're the one hosting this podcast. You talk to amazing, interesting people because you have the ability to have great conversations. It's a good balance between expertise here that I'm sure your listeners are going to enjoy. And about myself, I've been, you know, I think the story of you should always be very intriguing and engaging. And so I'm working on it. And I usually intro myself as like a medicine carrier turned medicine carrier, which is, yes, I started off in the conventional realm of pharmacy and witnessed how all different medicines worked. And yes, have such great, you know, thank you gratitude for emergency medicine and a lot of the great scientific, just like curative ways that conventional medicine offers. But I guess through life experience and different people I've trusted, I've gotten an opportunity to witness so many other of healing. And that's why now I'm a different kind of medicine carrier. And your title, psychedelics, I guess I'm going to be clear and outright say, yes, psychedelic carrier. From the start of like my early teens with LSD to psilocybin to, yes, MDMA, and now more so the last 4 to 5 years, the one molecule I think that is going to change the world, 5-MeO-DMT.
So, yeah, and that's like an interesting thing, you know, like you and I both have a very specific affinity for 5-MeO-DMT, and I 100% agree with you that I think it's going to change the world. And I think it's, and this is subjective and people would argue with that, is that I think that any psychedelic journey, generally the conclusion is with 5-MeO-DMT in experience and in depth and in complexity. And so, you know, you did your pharmacological training, you became a pharmacist, you work with these compounds, you know about interactions. And so how did you get to the point where, you know, you were facilitating 5-MeO-DMT and then you created a program called Toad School, which I've attended and is absolutely fantastic. And so you're basically training people on how to facilitate this and providing sort of your pharmacological background in how this works, how this functions. So tell us a little bit about how you came to this point where you are now training people in facilitation.
Yeah, I think it's important too, Dr. Nguyen, just to kind of discuss a little bit more about your formalized training, because it sounds like typically when people think pharmaceuticals, they think Western medicine. And we're talking about things that aren't necessarily rooted in that scientific, hard Western medicine, because psychedelics are typically, as far as my understanding, they're fairly frowned upon from like an academia kind of standpoint. So that transition from your training to where you're at now, I'm really curious about. So if you could elaborate on that a little bit, it'd be helpful, I think.
All right. And I'm going to try to answer that as clearly as possible. So it's about, I started in, yes, academia, kind of like, because all parents want your kids to be a doctor. And so I rebelled a little bit and I thought, haha, I'm going to be a pharmacist instead. And did all of that. And like, I mean, 2 years in pre-pharmacy, 4 years in pharmacy, then started working in the hospital where I got to see how medicines actually worked on people and counseled them pre and post and got into, then I learned that my level of education wasn't enough to work in the hospitals, and all of my colleagues were starting to do their doctorates. And I thought, okay, well, I gotta keep going at this. And I guess I finally answered my parents' dream and became a doctor, because that's where I got my doctorate in pharmacy at the University of Washington. And actually, for a while, I didn't even do psychedelics. I kind of just went the whole like straight-laced way. Although, like, you know, sometimes you think about the term straight-laced, you're like, wait, laced? Anyway. Yeah. And then I came back to psychedelics, actually, thanks to Burning Man. And I had a psilocybin experience that just, I could just say, wow, like, I had experiences when I was younger, and it was just different. And I think it was the self-work and all of the, just all of the knowledge and everything just came, right? It's just like, it was, there was so much momentum that was just, it was just like ready to burst. And then I had that psychedelic experience, and it just all integrated together. And that's when I started to just get really curious about, okay, what is, how does this all work? And then what are these studies now? I had no idea that study going on through MAPS until my experience around started to see, oh, it helps with PTSD and end of life anxiety. Yeah, I experienced it myself, and then got into just more curiosity about, okay, well, I have a specialty in molecules and how they interact with each other. Let's start to understand this more at this deeper. And once you start understanding this all, like, knowledge is power, and power is a responsibility. So I found it to be a responsibility then to start sharing what I knew with others, and through just connection. When you start getting really into something, people start coming to you because you start contributing more. It's just a beautiful relationship you get. And I started to connect with amazing people who started to come back to me, ask me questions, and it just organically started happening that I started to learn more because of those questions, and became much more confident in being an authority on knowing how molecules worked and how they interact with others. That I also offer a consultation service on, okay, you have this long list of meds, is it safe, or what approaches can we do to have it safe for you to journey on this psychedelic? And that's part of my offering.
Well, and I think
well.
That's really important, because there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of disconcerting fears that people have about, can I do psychedelics with the medications that I'm on? And a lot of it is seemingly anecdotal, and a lot of it is sort of fear-based. And that's one thing that I really appreciated about my conversations with you, was that you were able to sort of, with a very high degree of definity, be like, no, these are not actually concerning. These interactions don't necessarily mean anything. And, you know, and actually one of the bigger things was about SSRIs, like selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are the most common antidepressant prescribed pretty much to like a very high portion of society. And there's always been this stigma that you cannot touch a psychedelic while you're on SSRIs, because you'll have serotonin syndrome and all these terrible things. And I feel like, you know, like you explained to me, is that that was a theoretical issue that was brought up at one point, and then it just became some sort of urban truth. And yet, actually, the research generally suggests that SSRIs actually don't really pose any significant concern with consuming tryptamine psychedelics, which is huge, because I know so many people who are concerned about that. And it is, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah, what was the... I was just curious. What was the thought about SSRIs and tryptamine psychedelics being an issue when taken together?
In my pharmacy work in the hospitals, as soon as we saw more than one serotonergic agent on board, then there was a risk of serotonin syndrome. So yes, add an SSRI with something else that works on serotonin, like a different psychoactive medicine, and the risk of serotonin syndrome goes up. So yes. Oh, psilocybin, tryptamines. Oh, well, they work on serotonin. So yes, that should theoretically cause serotonin syndrome. That's the theory. However, when you look at something like psilocybin or magic mushrooms, the way it actually works is it doesn't flood the system with serotonin. It doesn't flood your neurons with serotonin. It actually just floats around and pretends to be serotonin. And then attaching onto that neuron, it just says, hey, I'm serotonin, but I'm on you, and I'm going to act differently than serotonin. So it doesn't flood it. Like MDMA, yes, floods the system. That's why MDMA has a little bit higher risk, but like, yes, like psilocybin, it pretty much is the safest psychedelic you can take, because it has, it doesn't like cause a cascade of, whoa, what's happening? It's just like, if you don't have enough receptors, which is what serotonin attaches to, you're just not going to have an effect, which is what the effect is if you use an SSRI or SNRI with psilocybin. It's that, oh, there's just not a receptor there, and it's just going to float around and not induce the effect that you're
looking for. So that's
interesting.
So that being on an SSRI like Paxil, Celexa, some variation of that, would actually reduce or inhibit actually having the psychedelic experience, as to the opposite of having a serotonin syndrome, which people generally have been concerned about.
Yeah, and there still is an interaction. It's just that, I first off say, usually in my consultations, it's really important to emphasize, hey, it's safe. They're like, oh, okay, it's safe. However, this might happen. And it's about managing expectations. Because the danger in that is on their last, like their fifth SSRI and SNRI, DNRI, and all these things they've tried. They're at the end of all hope. And now they're just got all of their chips here, and all of a sudden nothing happens, and they've set up for it and they paid a lot of money for experience. Like, there is still that, it still needs to be emphasized, there is an interaction and this is what can happen.
Yeah.
Is there a risk with monoamine oxidase inhibitors, or like MAOIs?
So there is an interaction there too. However, an interaction can be, we want that to happen, or it could be, oh, we didn't want that to happen. Like ayahuasca is an interaction between an MAOI and an DMT. So people actually have combined psilocybin with an MAOI, and they call it psilowasca, yeah. Which then increases the effect. And
it does. It's by like
you can
read
all about
like
it.
Times so five sort of experience.
Oh, so it almost like potentiates it.
Yeah, significantly. Like I remember I did 7 grams of mushrooms on a MAO inhibitor, and it was insane. Like, I was not expecting that. Like, yeah, it was wild.
Actually, you're probably the right person to ask this question about, because we were just talking to somebody earlier about psilocybin. One thing that kind of circulates the dark corners of the internet, or Reddit, as I like to call it, is this concept of...
I was thinking like Silk Road or some weird shit, but fair enough.
Fair enough. I guess it depends on your perspective.
Like, what dark web?
But it's this concept of lemon tech with psilocybin, which is essentially like making psilocybin tea and then combining it with lemons to help accelerate basically modify it to a pro chemical.
Yeah, or anything that's acidic. So, like
vinegar, or
technically I think Sprite has the acidity enough to break down, to convert psilocybin.
Sorry,
to
are we now going to do Sprite and mushrooms?
Yeah. So, sorry, what's your question?
Well, I think the question what he was asking was that, is that really an effective means to have a more effective way to consume psilocybin is with something that is acidic? So, and...
Yeah, I've been... So, thinking pharmacologically, and maybe there's something I'm missing, it's psilocybin is what's in all of these cubenuses, and then psilocybin converts into psilocin in an acidic environment. So usually your stomach, it'll convert. And I think it converts readily. I think it converts pretty much to 100% as long as you have the stomach pH to convert it. A lemon tech pre-converts it. So then I would then imagine, yes, you pre-convert it. You've got now like this wonderful package of psilocin ready for you to just take in, which then the onset would be a lot sooner. You're not waiting for the stomach acid to start coming out, and then your pH decreases. So then the onset would be faster. The peak would be higher because you've got it fully converted. And I'm hearing sometimes people saying the trip lasts longer. I guess in my farms, like the way I'm thinking about it, I don't see how.
No,
that
I feel
happens.
Like if anything, it would last shorter.
So anecdotally, I've heard it's lasted shorter, and it's also easier on the stomach.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that it'd be shorter.
Okay,
but yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and so.
Okay, good. Because there's some anecdotal stories, and like, oh, it was just a lot longer, but perhaps just because objectively it's so much more intense. Even, at the end of a five experience, you're like, whoa, that
you
was
disassociate from time, and you're
like
yeah, that was infinity, and you're still trying to quantify what goes on.
Yeah, that's okay. Realistically, that question was just kind of like a little test, just to make sure that we were actually talking to a pharmacist.
And
yeah, I actually had a consult today about I'm still trying to fully put the pieces together, but our stomach's pH is actually quite neutral until we have something in our stomachs. And people take things like PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, which neutralize our stomachs and keep it neutral all the time so that you don't create ulcers. So there is a theory, and I need to check in with others because I'm trying to check what the pH is that if you take psilocybin and you're on a proton pump inhibitor, it could be that you don't have an experience at all. And actually, there is one case of that.
Because you're not actually converting. Can you give an example of a proton pump inhibitor that people will be taking?
Pantelock. Pantelock, which is, I'm trying to think about the brand name of it. And then there's also
Losec?
And then there's like Omeprazole. Losec,
so Prilosec and Omeprazole. And then those are the generic names. I'm trying to think about the brand names.
But you know, it's worthwhile knowing you can be on a pharmacologically prescribed medication that completely inhibits a psychedelic experience just based on the fact that your stomach acid is not at a high enough pH to actually convert psilocybin into psilocin and then have an experience. Which I don't think anyone would really know other than having a conversation with a pharmacist who actually specializes in psychedelic interactions. Because I'm pretty sure that I can go to Shoppers Drug Mart and have a conversation with a pharmacist. This is not going to be revealing. I'll try that tomorrow and see what happens.
Yeah, they don't really know that you need an acidic environment to convert psilocybin
into
psilocybin.
You just get a raised eyebrow and a disappointing look.
And probably a call for security or some such thing. So, you know, and one of the things that I was really excited to have you on this podcast for is sort of your work with 5-MeO-DMT, because like I was saying before, I think 5-MeO-DMT is, I don't want to say the pinnacle of psychedelic experience because I know people would get upset about that, but for me, it has been.
I would.
Right? I know. Well, we share the same sort of theory on this. And so how did you get into 5-MeO-DMT? And then you got sort of into facilitation. And I just want to say again, too, that in Canada, 5-MeO-DMT is not illegal. It is not scheduled or anything. So we're not talking about anything illegal right now. And so how did you go from sort of, you went from pharmacists, psychedelic experience at Burning Man, and then at some point you had 5-MeO-DMT, which obviously had a huge impact, as it has on everyone who consumes it. So like, sort of tell us about how that transpired.
And also, why is it the holy grail of psychedelics in your mind?
Well, I think we'll get to that as we go, because that is a very difficult thing to describe. And when you describe that, it's. So let's start from the beginning and we'll get to that very interesting statement as we progress.
Yeah, because I already have an answer for Jason. Oh.
Well, so shit, give the answer to Jason then if you have it, because...
Well, how about... I'm going to do a throwback to like the 90s, I think, and like reading Rainbow. It's like, you don't have to take my word for it. You could listen to the Shulgins. Yeah. And Adam, you've heard this before, but the Shulgins are, to me, the true psychonauts. Tried hundreds of different molecules at different doses. So they wrote about it, right? Thikkal and Thikkal. And they, I heard a story actually recently where someone asked Sasha and said, you know, what 5-MeO, what is it? And then Sasha said, well, God needed a back door. And so that was his response to 5-MeO-DMT. And they created a rating scale because they've tried so many different psychedelics. And I had this as like a little thing in my toad school thing, but I'll share it with you guys. So they have the rating scale of +1 to +4. And I think I'm going to try to shorten it a bit. But you could imagine what +1 to +4 is. +4 would be super, super intense. +1 to +3 is just kind of like, yeah, I'm in it, or that was really intense. +3 is going to be, imagine like 3 or 4 tabs of LSD. You're just like, whoa, what just happened? Maybe not for Adam, but for the majority of people, that he's like, whoa, that's super intense. I don't know if I can get there again, or like, you know. But +4 is like something that is not even part of the rating scale. They said it's just a mystical experience. And they said, and I'm paraphrasing, but they said if there's a molecule that can create a +4 or even a modality, like say, and a breath work plus qigong plus blah blah blah, it's conceivable that something that could create a +4 experience may be the end of the human experience, or it could be something so transformative for the entire humanity that it's just, it'll just transform everything. And, you know, I ask everyone in chill school, like, what do you think they said is a plus four? And then, like, you know, some people don't jump on it, but so, like, I'm like, okay, you know, this is a 5 of you, a DMT course, that, yeah, someone usually just, like, 5 and they go, it's like, bingo, yeah. You got it, yes. Really, it's like, they mentioned, according to Marvin, who's another really great 5 and Neo experience, like, authority, he said, he asked Sasha, like, what else is plus four? And Sasha said, there's only 2 molecules he ever encountered that were plus four, and he can't remember the other. So,
yeah.
It's 5-MeO, and it's my winning ticket, and I've chosen that because I'd had such a transformational experience in that, and I think I'm going to move into your question, which is, after Burning Man, I thought, okay, I need to explore psychedelics more, and I used to facilitate for friends and other family members, and it was beautiful, and, you know, I kind of forgot my way a bit. And I got back into following a shaman, started to learn how to facilitate with psilocybin, doing that work. And I just kept feeling this urge about 5-MeO. And there was this conference in Vancouver called the Spirit Plant Medicine Conference, and connected with a few people there talking about 5-MeO. And I just thought, I got to do this. It just seems to be all these signs. Like, you wait for the divide to show you, like, 3 signs. So Vipassana, like, 3 people mention it, like, okay, I gotta do it. Burning Man, 3 people mention it, it's like, okay, I gotta do this. 5-MeO, like, just, yep, it just kept coming in my purview. It's like, all right, let's do this. And yeah, it was, I wouldn't say I would call it suffer, but I have a proclivity to control, right? Yeah. Just, okay, gotta get everything figured out, because I like how chips are gonna fall. And it was just the first invitation and the only invitation I ever need to just know, oh, this is what surrender feels like. This is what just letting it all go and just the biggest trust fall into the universe can feel like. And it's just, at the end of it, you just know, I got this. I know now how to be authentic without any fear. And I just also noticed my nervous system was completely reset. There'd be some times I would have this, like, irrational fear of heights. Like, I could just, like, look over a balcony and just start getting, like, a little nervous and shaky. And afterwards, I could just, like, literally look over, like, the highest balconies and just know, like, hey, this is dangerous. But I don't have these weird thoughts about, what if I jump? You know, do I be, like, you know, all these weird, loopy thoughts that I used to have. And I just realized, well, my fear of death has, I have a new relationship with the fear of death. And with that new relationship, I reset things so I'm no longer afraid of things that shouldn't have that such a high level of fear. You know, like, your boss tells you, oh, this paper is due, and it feels like a tiger is chasing you in the woods, in the jungle, you know? It's like, it's like, reset everything. Like, okay, I'm not going to die, but I can undo it, right? So I can act through the world with true authenticity, because when you're afraid, you act out of authenticity with self. So as soon as I had that experience, it was just, I mean, experience itself is amazing, but just afterwards, how I acted in the world, I just thought, okay, I got to see how this works with other people. So I started offering it to my friends, and I just saw small things like addictions to things just vanished, OCD vanished. Someone just went from heavyweight to the leanest they've ever been their entire life, switched to yoga and meditation, no longer just eating meat. There's nothing wrong with eating meat, but just, like, that's what they thought was amazing. So I just thought, hey, if I could just see, I can create or inspire, spark change in just a small fraction of people, that's better than anything I could have done in my career as a pharmacist. And then I just went full time into that, and started facilitating, like, hundreds of journeys. And once again, and it's the most fueling thing you could do, is offer this experience to others. It's just so beautiful when they wake up and they're just like, wow, thank you. It's just a feeling of gratitude of, like, oh my God, I'm alive and this is beautiful, and I can see the world in a different way. I it fills my cup, like, every single time, right? I offer.
Yeah.
And
like, it's
then then like why I switched to why Toad School is, I was doing this full time. Anyone who's curious about it, which was a lot of people, like, I want to start training. Like, let me start sitting with you. Yes, let's like do more of this together. And I just recognized that it took a lot of sits for people to get this experience and confidence. Like, I think 20 sits is like usually where they say, okay, I think I feel good about this. Like, but I don't like bottlenecks. I'm like usually a person that likes like to be efficient in things and figure out how to make it more efficient. So I sat in Vipassana, 7 months pregnant. So then, of course, I'm not going to have the time to facilitate as much as I did. And then just, you know, in noble silence, which I'm going to highly just try to advertise for Vipassana. It's amazing. Dhamma.org. In noble silence, you hear your own voice. You hear truly what your motivations are once all of the other things get silenced. And it just came to me. It's like, you could do this another way. You can load up front all the didactics, give them a notebook with all the materials. They can refer to it afterwards. And then when they all know how to serve, they can start serving to each other. And that's the most consensual way for them to practice because they can all work together and guide each other. And then it also creates community of like more guides because like there's so many of us just I feel like I started on my own almost. You know, I had a mentor at some point, but it's just like you just feel so alone. So why don't we do this all together? And that's how Toad School came to be.
Well, and I find that really amazing because, like, you know, I've done a lot of 5-MeO just because I think it's so purely perfect. And I've facilitated for other people.
Cool.
And it's as much as it is, like you say, it's so deeply rewarding. It's also a little bit scary because you're taking people to a place where they themselves dissolve into the fabric of the universe. And it's always somewhat alarming to me that when I'm doing this for people where I'm like, wow, I'm taking someone so far beyond whatever they perceive their comfort zone to be. And then when they come back, it's deeply rewarding seeing their facial expression and that they've transcended something, transcended life, transcended existence, reality, whatever you want to refer to it as. And I thought your course, because I attended Toad School in Toronto, and you're right, like it is creating a community, there's groups of people, and people are learning the pharmacological interactions, they're learning safety, which is paramount and super important, but also just what is the methodology of facilitating? Like, how do you facilitate something that's so profoundly life-altering for people? And what's the follow-up? What are things that you can be concerned about? And what are things that you are there to expect? And it is interesting to note that when we went to Toad School, like, the vast majority of people there were, you know, psychology students or practitioners, therapists. Uh-huh. It was almost all of them, actually, were somehow involved in some sort of therapy context, which was really interesting to see is that people are so rapidly adopting 5-MeO-DMT into these therapy practices. And so from that perspective, you know, you were doing this and then people are doing 5-MeO-DMT on the subsequent day, they're interacting with each other. You know, what do you take away from training people? Like, do you think that the idea is that, you know, I hate to make a biblical reference, but the idea of you can give a man a fish or you can teach him how to fish, is that sort of the consensus in which you think this is going to work?
First off, if anyone's going to come into a 9 to 10 hour day, usually I think we have a little bit of selection bias for like, okay, I really want to learn about this. And yes, I'm going to learn all about the safety. I have a little like a schedule, but like, yeah, that's a full day. And so I do feel like I select out for people who are really, really interested. But I'm really, really glad that there's been a small number of people who said, sitting here, I don't think I'm ready for it. And it's just, for me, that's a sign to say, I've empowered people to say no. Because that is what we're all about, is consent, safety, and reverence for the medicine. And I'm trying to remember all the other parts of your question.
No, it's all good. I have this terrible habit of asking like 5 questions in a single statement and then be like, answer them. So, well, How about this? So one thing that I think we should get into, because I always forget that people don't necessarily know what we're talking about. So what is 5-MeO-DMT? Where does it occur naturally? What is the product that you are generally thinking that is appropriate for consumption? And how does this work in our bodies and our minds?
All right, let's start. So it was found the first time it was ever discovered, but synthesized in the 30s in Japan, synthesized again in Canada, I think, I can't remember what year, but where it started to really get popularized was in the 60s, where they somehow found out that milk is toad and you better not lick it because that could be cardiotoxic or you can get a little paralyzed for a slight period of time. But if you smoke it, put it in your pipe and smoke it, it turns psychedelic. And I have no idea. To me, it seems like one of those like stories of just like how ayahuasca, like the plants told us to mix these two together.
Yeah, it's like that chicken before the egg like concept where it's like, which came first? Like, how was this figured out? And you're absolutely right. The Bufo Alvarez toad or the Colorado River toad has venom parotid glands, which produce 5-MeO-DMT and buffonin and a whole bunch of other various alkaloids. And it's profoundly toxic if you ingest it orally. But yet, if you milk these, you know, glands and you get this liquid that comes out that is sort of like a weird cloudy white, you dry it and then you vaporize it, you have these experiences. And it's wild to me.
And the molecule itself is very simple. It's like, it's just very similar to serotonin. Actually, it's I'll use a little scientific term, but a super agonist. Like our receptors, our brain loves 5-MeO even more so than serotonin. It's just like right into their neuron. It's like, I love this. And I have a little theory, which is, well, first off, we do know grasses, plants, it's everything. And it's found in our urine, CSF, so cerebral spinal fluid, and blood. So we make it, it's natural to us. And my theory is, I think our bodies our bodies love it. And there's this experience that I had when I meditated in a dark room for 21 days. And Murtagh Chia is this authority in dark room meditations, but his theory is that melatonin, which we probably don't make enough of because of all of the blue lights industrialized lifestyle we have, like melatonin converts into pinolin, which then converts into both 5-MeO-DMT and NMDMT. So that's the pathway. It's from melatonin. And I think that I've heard from people that have been taking a little bit more of it regularly, and they notice, I feel like my body is just much more efficient. My theory is and also in my darker meditation, I was definitely having NMDMT and 5-MeO-DMT experience. And so I feel like it's true. It's my truth that, yes, I was making 5-MeO-DMT in a dark room because that is the pathway that it's true to me. So I think that our bodies love that it makes it. And I think that we lack it. So I think I'm going into another realm, where we talk a little bit about, like, say, microdosing and macrodosing, but yes, we do make it naturally. Our brains love it. And there's theories out there that it's what we release upon birth and upon death.
I want to chime in, but like, even like I, and as people who follow the podcast might very well know, is that I was electrocuted to death.
Did you die one time?
Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd mention that right now. But it's flat out, like, death is a psychedelic experience. Like, it is 100% an endogenous release of a seemingly a mix of like 5-MeO-DMT and NMDMT. And so, out of curiosity, and I know this is like really speculative, but why do you think that we have NMDMT and 5-MeO-DMT in our bodies at any given time? Like, what do you think the biological mechanism is for actually having these circulating neurotransmitters, for lack of a better term, just present all the time? Like, I've heard people suggest that it's responsible for dreams or our perception of reality, but...
And just to kind of elaborate on that, not even just the fact that we're able to endogenously produce this chemical, but like to have the receptors to be able to accept this chemical is kind of unique as well. So why?
Well, it's like it's a serotonin receptor that receives it. So we've, like, serotonin is just like usually like a signaling. It's serotonin's everywhere, but yeah, it's why do we have, like, why is it created and why is it evolutionary just there to be received by the serotonin receptor? I think we're going into a lot of theory, but I really do think that our body, it's just part of our evolution. And not to why, but I really do think we the way just that we're living, I think we are just naturally not having as much circulating in our bodies as we used to back when we pre-industrial times. Yeah. I think it's just part of like just our functioning, and whether it's with dreams or whether it's to help us calm down in near-death experiences or to help usher us into a near-death experience. Actually, just as a, maybe your electrocution story is a little different, but in a few of my kind of induced states of bodily stress, your body has this ability to keep yourself calm. Like when I did free diving, I didn't do this myself, but I know many of the expert free divers I was with, they said that when you start actually losing air and your CO2, right, levels rise and O2 goes down, it's a very blissful, dreamy state. And when people start like coming up to the surface and you've got to like wake them up by blowing on their cheeks because of the mammalian reflex, like they can start breathing, they're like, why'd you wake me up? It was great. It felt so great, right? So actually suffocating isn't as scary as you might think, well, if you're in a freediving experience. And I did a 4-day dry fast, so no water, no food, and I didn't push myself that much, but someone else I followed, he did it for 3 or 4.5 days, and he said, oh my gosh, I was in just like this wonderful dream state. And it's probably why all those animals have a watering hole, like alligators and gazelles and giraffes and all of them, because I just all hang out together because they're all just delirious and happy, and then they drink water and then they're like, doing these things, and then they go off.
Well, it's like, also interesting that you say that, because, like, sorry, I just mean like the biological mechanisms that we have in place evolutionary to provide sort of what might perceive as some sort of mechanism induced that allows us to go and die in peace. And you see, you know, like a gazelle in the Serengeti being torn apart by hyenas, and they go into shock. They, what I assume to be like these releases of various hormones in their body, plus, you know, 5-MeO-DMT and NDMT, and they're literally being eaten alive, and yet they just calmly and graciously go into the good night. You know, and same with like hypothermias, you know, which arguably is similar to suffocation in that sense. And all these different methods of death, which somehow there's this biological mechanism that allows us to die in peace, which is actually really incredible if you think about it.
Well, I was going to say, it kind of supports what you're talking about with regards to stress states and this being an endogenous chemical to kind of support us through these events. Because, I mean, you look at Native American or Indigenous sweat lodges. It's the same thing. Like, these vision quests come out from this like high stress environment, heat, lack of food.
Yeah. I've actually done a couple of sweat lodges before in downtown Toronto at like, basically a men's mission for Native Americans. And we were in there and like, yeah, you actually have these interesting psychedelic experiences. Like I think it was at like 4 or 5 hours in the sweat, I dehydrated. It's insanely hot. And I was having like open, well, it's pitch black, so open closed eyes makes no difference, but it was like full blown psychedelic experience. And so it's interesting that how frequently we're interacting with NN-DMT or 5-MeO-DMT endogenously in our bodies, and we just don't necessarily realize it.
Yeah. And let me just, I want to make sure I finish the thought is, so we do know that getting to the point of possibly perishing, our body has mechanisms to keep us calm and not panic. And then when you go into a 5-MeO experience, I'll just echo what a lot of people say is, it felt like I just died, but I went to the most beautiful place. So there you go. We put 1 and 2 together. And this is really what I think is happening is, you're experiencing to die before you die, which is the Eleusinian mysteries, right?
Yeah.
What happens when you do die before you die? The end of that is you don't die when you die.
Which is kind of fascinating too, because you think about Buddhism, and a lot of aspects of Buddhism is fundamentally training yourselves for that moment of death so that you can go gracefully into it. And whereas okay. like this parallel with psychedelics and the idea of dying before you can die so that you can live, you know, without this fear of our mortality, which permeates pretty much every aspect of our lives. Let's be realistic. And okay. and the idea of, and you know, and I got to be honest with you, I'm actually really curious about, you know, what death is going to be when you don't have the fear of it and you've already experienced some version of it. And I do legitimately think with both an experience as being dead before and have done fairly significant amounts of 5-MeO-DMT that they are one and the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're on the same page. Yeah. They're the same boat. Yeah.
And if it is death, then holy shit, how amazing is that? You know what I mean? That you can like, you can just basically be dissolved into the fabric of the universe and become perfection in every aspect of what that means. And you can experience that while you're breathing. You can experience that on an afternoon in 15 uh-huh. minutes. Like
without actually dying.
Yeah. Well that's the thing. It's like, well, it depends on what you perceive from the idea of a physical death. Yeah. But if the idea of an emotional or cognitive death, you do die. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure if you can differentiate.
For me, I feel like it's a meditation. Like 5-MeO is a, you do it enough times and you just have no more of that just friction and you just completely dissolve, like just with true acceptance. It's a meditation upon death. I think 5-MeO, when you do it, you're meditating upon death, which is the highest level of meditation. And what if we, like, who knows what happens, but what if we do treat the moment of death like a 5-MeO experience then? At least then, at that point, we're just going to accept it as any other, this action happened, right? Who's to say good or bad? It's like, hey, that happened. I will accept it as it is and not fight it. And then who knows? Like, there's a story of the people who, there's like a carriage and, you know, like the horse carriage crashes and who doesn't get injured? It's the person who's drunk because he didn't, you know. Because
they went,
you know,
limp.
Tense up.
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny that you actually say that because like Jason and I were both paramedics and I have been to so many car accidents where say a drunk driver hits, you know, car full of people or something. And the only person who survives is the guy who was wasted, who just went completely limp and flipped.
It's anecdotal, but it's so accurate.
It really is. Like, I'm not sure the statistical probability, but even just being there and seeing that, it is an interesting thing.
Yeah. So what if we receive death just as if we receive a 5 experience and without tensing up and just with full acceptance? We don't know what it's on the other end, but I'm pretty sure if we do follow Hinduism and Buddhism, that if we accept it with just full love, then where you might end up maybe, someplace where you are at that vibrational level in which you grew to.
Well, and we interviewed a psychologist recently and we were talking and the conversation went as it does. And he was basically of the opinion that psychedelics are teaching us how to die. And I thought that was a really interesting thing for him to say. And I completely agree with him. And I'm not sure many people really understand that, but it's like very much like the work from, you know, like I guess to some extent Imperial College, John Hopkins, specifically John Hopkins with, you know, Roland Griffith about using higher dose psilocybin to alleviate the fear of death in palliative patients. It does seem, you know, like you're talking about like the mysteries in Greece.
Wow.
Is that psychedelics are inherently allowing us to alleviate these deep, deep ingrained fears of our mortality.
And even just thinking about, we are so just youthful. State like, hey, there's a wall here, my knees here. It's accepting another frame of reference, another just another reality, just like saying I'm letting go of what I know to be. That is very close to a meditation upon death. So I agree with it, and that's what I've always thought too. But it is very, it's like you gotta see who you're talking to.
And so, and one other thing too, that again, for any of our listeners who might not understand what NN-DMT or 5-MeO-DMT, sort of let's just get in the context of like, so how do I do 5-MeO-DMT? What's the duration? What's, you know, how does this work in our brains? Like, does it specifically attach to serotonin receptors? Is there any other receptors it attaches to? Like, how do you fundamentally create a profound experience of absolute unity from just simply vaporizing, you know, a handful of milligrams of a compound?
Hey, if there's any listeners out there that have access to an fMRI, I am very interested in going into it and seeing what happens with brain circuitry. So, hey, just putting myself out there as a volunteer. We know what receptors it has affinity towards, like it ties affinity to 5-HT1A, and then it's got affinity to 2A, not as much, and 5-HT7. So there's just a lot of serotonin it touches, and at higher doses, it does also activate dopamine. So we just need to learn more about, okay, what do all these receptors really do? What flavor do all these receptors impart, right? Why is ketamine called a psychedelic, but it doesn't work on serotonin at all? It works on,
at this point,
what we know is NMDA, but it's actually like newer studies. It's like, wait, maybe it's not NMDA receptors, but that's another part of different science. So what I'd love to know, and studies are slowly coming out, but I'm glad there is interest in 5-MeO-DMT, which is what exactly is it doing and how does it create such a like non-dual experience, a very high correlation with non-dual experiences. And what does non-dual experience look like? My friend told me she went to a BUFO conference in, I think, Mexico back in 2017, and she said that there is a high-level monk who tried it, and he said, yep, that's where we go. So we're getting in a peak of where high-level meditation and possibly enlightenment looks like.
Right. And you know what? And like, let's be realistic. I'm a talking monkey. I don't know what enlightenment is, but I will say is that my view of enlightenment is a full, complete 5-MeO-DMT release. You know what I mean? Like it really is. It's transcendent. It's beautiful. It's perfect. It's the actual true term of perfection, which I don't really think many people understand what that actually means.
Yeah. When they say the term ineffable, it's like, just cannot be described. You can't use language to describe it. You just gotta try one day just to know. Just because even saying what non-dual is, you know, the word non-dual, it's not so boring to non-dual.
It does.
It's just like, yeah. Whoa, non-dual is like the most awesome, which is like the like awe. Awesome means terrifyingly beautiful. If you break it down, it's just like, yes, it is truly an awesome experience.
In non-dual, arguably, you could describe as just simply being everything. You know, there's non-dual is there's no separation or differentiation between anything, which I think is an interesting component of what 5-MeO-DMT done properly and facilitated properly is an experience of knowing no boundary between anything.
Oh, and that then reminds me, let's go back to one of your five questions that you rolled out before we didn't get to, which is, how do you actually experience 5-MeO-DMT? And there's many different routes of administration. And the most popular common one is through vaporization with a pipe, bubbler, or nowadays vape pens. And what's great about it is, yes, it's intense, it's profound, but you can be back in a few minutes. Like the longest experience usually is about 30 minutes long, and that's at the higher doses. So like the lower dose is 1 to 2 minutes, the middle dose. And that's how I think the responsible method of administering it is go low and slow, get that nervous system, spirit to relax and say, yes, I'm safe. And then just titrate it up higher and a little higher. You don't have to go to these super high doses because you could completely just forget what the experience was because the mind just says, no, this is too intense. I'm going to shut this down. So the way to do it is low and slow. And there's just so much that can come out of these experiences. Like the highest zenith dose isn't sometimes the gold mine. It's sometimes the lowest dose is like, whoa, I didn't know that this memory was buried in deep. And I have to go and integrate this. One story, he's now a friend of mine. He came to Toad School six in Vancouver, but even at the low dose, he's had, due to trauma, he's had essential hypertension. He's under 30, but he's had hypertension for years, unexplained. He did the handshake dose, which is like 2 milligrams, and he shook and cried out for like 30 minutes because like there was just something going on at that low dose. And now he keeps sending me photos of his like blood pressure monitor. It's like, I had a stressful week and I'm still like 110 over like 60. Like, what is going on here? Where he's usually like 150 something over like 80 to 90s. Just like, I don't know what happened, but yeah, like I'm so grateful for this molecule. So the tiny doses, yeah, there's something at every dose. So that's why I always, in my trainings and when I offer the medicines to people, is let's see what comes up as we slowly, gradually titrate things up. And so, should we go into
out of
like
curiosity?
Should we go deeper into the dosing, or like that? Like that's kind of the intro.
Well, yes, I think we should talk about that because it's so powerful. It's just a very small amount in milligrams. Uh-huh. But one other thing I want to ask before we get into that is like, is 5-MeO-DMT dangerous? Because I think a lot of people are generally scared because of even shit, just the conversation we just had about death and this and that. Like, is 5-MeO dangerous? Like, you know, uh-huh. Is it something that can be handled safely if you have someone watching you? Are there any inherent dangers associated with it?
For the biggest danger is, that's why I say always dive with a buddy, is when you're getting to more of the middle and higher doses, people can purge. And you may lose some bodily function and purge. So that's where that can result in aspiration pneumonia. You could choke on your own vomit. And I think you actually have better, you can say better, do a better description of aspiration pneumonia, but that is the highest risk is you could choke on your own vomit or saliva and not be aware of your bodily function. So you need to have someone there to know how to react to it. That's just putting them into recovery position.
Flip them in the recovery position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get them in a safe place.
I think.
And also like consuming this on an empty stomach too, which is appropriate, like fasting for, you know, like I always do it in the morning after an entire, you know, eat early, go to bed, wake up in the morning, 9 a.m., you know, great way to start the day. But then, yeah, and on top of that too, is it because, yeah, like you said, medium and larger doses, you can be regurgitating and...
Yeah, and it's not everyone. I think, the weird thing is for me, I think my proportion of people purging is like 10%. But I know people who they have like 100% rate of purging. And so that's just a funny thing with this molecule. I feel like it takes on the signature of who's serving it. That's going into a little bit of like a spiritual conversation.
Yeah.
The other danger is if you go too high, like much too high. So that's why I strongly advocate having validated forms of measuring. So I do a scale that measures to the milligram. I also use a spoon that's been validated. And then I've done like, at this point, I feel like almost thousands of doses. So I kind of have a good idea of what like 2 milligrams versus 8 milligrams is going to be, but I still never trust my eyeballs. I always use the scale and like at least one other thing, but it's just good to like just have everything line up, right? But if you go too high, you could disassociate, which is completely just not remember anything, which can leave a bit of, I mean, there's a lot of, you could feel as if like, wait, what happened? Get a little confused with the experience. And it just leaves people, I guess, a little disheartened and upset about what happened, especially when they just like, hey, I've prepped myself for the most intense experience and I don't remember what happened other than someone told me I was screaming, rolling around for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And one other risk.
What would be the appropriate dosing then? Keep going with the risks, actually.
There's one other risk, which is, this is what I'm putting together is, I know people have said they've had, which is a very interesting side effect of 5-MeO-DMT, is it's not like LSD flashbacks, where it's like, oh my gosh, you might just have a flashback. I never had an LSD flashback. According to the science, I'd be clinically insane. Or not the science, but the old wives' tales or whatever that was.
Yeah, the anecdotes.
But 5-MeO as a true phenomenon where you could be in a limbic state, just like relaxing, meditating, listening to music, and then all of a sudden, like, whoa, I feel like I'm back in the medicine. What's just happening? So that's a reactivation. I find that it happens in about 10% of people who've received it, but it tends to be higher correlation with people who have had higher doses. So you could have people who've like had maybe too high of a dose, they have a higher chance of reactivation, and those reactivations can be much more intense and long-lasting. Like could last for even more than a few weeks, whereas for most people it goes away in a week or two. And it's actually a very pleasant experience for most people. They're like, oh, I get a free ride, like this is great. But some people,
I get them like almost every night when I'm dreaming at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I'll wake up in a full blown 5-MeO DMT experience and just go with it. It's
maybe your brain's just stunning. Like, I know where this is going. It's like releasing 5-MeO while you're dreaming, and it's just like, oh, I know this.
I'm hoping that's what's happening. Actually, it's just like, let's just continue with this. We've been here before.
Those are the only dangers that I'm mostly aware of, and it's just really important to do in a safe place. Like, I know there's a lot of YouTube videos of doing it in a river. It's like, maybe not.
That's fucking crazy. Yeah, actually, that is the most stupidest thing I've ever heard. Really? People doing it in a river?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what? Like, I have apprehension. Like, I've been with people doing 5-MeO-DMT where they have got up like a silverback gorilla and came across the floor in like some weird fight or flight response. And, you know, it's one of those things where you're taking people beyond the edge of what any perception of reality is. And it's so deeply profound and beautiful and beyond any form of description. But at the same time, you know, to get to that point, there's a lot of things that have to happen inside someone. And like you said, too, like, you know, dosing is important, but also, you know, set and setting, like in a place where someone is safe. Like doing it in a river is actually, that's alarming.
Uh-huh. But, it's one of the first videos I watched.
So again, question I asked before, just in a river, hope you don't drown. We'll see how this works out. So what would dosing be for 5-MeO-DMT? Like what would be what you describe as a handshake, a hug, or, you know, a mind melt or whatever the terminology is?
So the handshake is like, hey, let's get to know each other. Very, very quick acting. You're going to feel it within onset, like 10 seconds. And we're talking about synthetic. Right? Synthetic is like pretty much pure 5-MeO-DMT, not the BUFO. So like, yeah, let's get clear. We're talking about synthetic and we're talking about the vaporized form at this point. So 2 milligrams is a handshake and pretty much you're going to feel it within 10 seconds and it lasts for about like the peak is within those like 30 seconds to 1 minute. And then you just ride it out. 2 minutes is like you ride it out then can last for 2 to 10 minutes depending on whether you're sensitive to it or you're just like wanting to sit back and feel it. And I like to then move on. And I always, the pharmacist in me loves to titrate. So based on their response of the first dose, it's like, okay, maybe we need to do another handshake or maybe we just can go a little bit higher or maybe they didn't have really much of a response and I might go on a stronger hug. So the next one's a hug and my range is 4 to 6 milligrams. It's pretty much teetering on the psychoactivity of 5-MeO-DMT. So that's the range. Once again, the onset 10 seconds. For me, that peak lasts for about like 4 minutes or a little less. It's like it's different in everyone because we have different chemistry. And then it lasts for about like 10 to 15 minutes for most people. And they just lie back and feel it. But yeah, that's my favorite. But you know, in Toad School, it's the flood where you really get to know what your shadows are, what your fears are, and how it shows up. Like I've had people like be like, am I breathing? Am I breathing? You know, and it's just like whoa, like how, like whoa, yeah, like what's happening here?
Am I breathing? Like you're talking. It's a good sign.
Like they're just like there's, like their fears just show up, and it's just an opportunity to just say like just help them relax into their bodies again and just notice because you're now like kind of like floating in the subconscious. Like I really do feel like this is where it's a peek into. Like Jung says to like record your dreams and like this is an opportunity to just like be conscious in your dreams. And like I've had a lot of insights come up in that dose. And or also like either it's people who are very just anxious because it's very intense or they get beautiful insights, one or the other. And either way is an opportunity to just go deep into like, okay, how do I self-regulate or co-regulate with others to trust again? And you just find out like, okay, do I really, like, what is going on with my nervous system? It's just such a beautiful, beautiful like pieces of just gifts that we get with our middle dose, but it is scary. And then.
Yeah, it is.
And like, my way I work with it is very intuitive. Like, I feel like I'm just dancing with the other person, but the way I like present it and told Guru like, hey, this is a standard approach. But once you really get to know the medicine in yourself, do as you wish. Like, I I'd like a lot of people do many handshakes. I love doing, maybe if they really had a hard time with the hugs, like, let's stay there. Let's figure out what's going on in this hug dose where you don't feel safe before we move on to the last dose. Because that last dose, because it's just such a beautiful gift, what I would love for all those experiencing it is that it's a smooth ride to samadhi consciousness. They're not like rattling and like fighting it, because then if you're fighting it for half of the experience, you know, like you'd be like, that's what you're going to remember, and you're not maybe going to miss out on some of the,
yeah,
what's there for you. So to really get that nervous system, everything calmed down for that last shoot off to the stars. So yeah, the last one is, I like to stay in the range of 8 to 10 milligrams, especially if it's for a first timer. I think that once you feel safe, you don't need to go higher than that. Adam, you might say otherwise, but this is my experience.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. Like, you know, I've done very high doses of 5-MeO-DMT, but it was, I didn't know any better. And it served its purpose for me. And to be honest with you, I get more out of smaller doses now. Like doing like a 5 milligram, waiting till I come up, do another 5 milligram, waiting till I come up, and do a 7 milligram, like maybe over the course of 15 minutes or something, or 20 minutes. And it's,
yeah.
Like the higher doses are mind melting. And if you regain anything and retain anything from it, it's difficult to put those pieces together into something that's tangible. Yeah. And I kind of agree with you in the idea that these lower doses are actually significantly more beneficial for people.
So I'm going to quote or use the wisdom of Ralph Metzner, who's seen thousands of experiences. And he says anything above 15 milligrams is where 50% of people are going to disassociate, which is kind of like a coma state. They don't remember anything. And that's where you might get into like, yeah, that disheartened experience, like what just happened. Like, I can't put it together. So I absolutely stay below that, because once you're at 50%, that I'm like, what am I doing? I would love it to be a beautiful experience. So yeah, I stay around 8 to 10 milligrams for especially first timers. And there, it's the onset, once again, is 10 seconds. There, the peak is usually within like, it's really like, feels like the peak is like within 4 to 6 minutes, but it lasts for like, probably about 5 minutes is the peak duration, and then they just kind of slowly ride it down. And the experience itself lasts anywhere between 20 minutes or so, a little bit more, depending on that person and their brain physiology. Not physiology, they're just all of the neurotransmitters and how it all works.
And so one thing I want to ask you, because we're sort of like getting to the end of this, is that, so Toad School, like, how do people get in touch with you? How do they use you as a consult? How do they figure out how does Toad School work in that sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you end up in various cities around North America at certain times, like, you know, your webpage, how do they sort of contact you?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And first off, let me mention that I operate, and I'm like, it's like, okay, I've made that decision. I'm operating the way I want the world to be. And that is, I've been so moved by Vipassana and their Dana model, which is donation. It's we just give thanks to the experience that we have. And it's give what you can. Everything I do is via donation. And that's where I can then provide no barriers to access. So those who are students who are just curious, like, oh, is this safe? I really want to give it a try. But online, there's just like a black hole of information. What do I do? To therapists who call me. Everything is via donation, so that we have the safety. It should not even be a question. I would love to provide that for everyone. So consults, donation, and Stone School is via donation, because how else do I spread this without barriers, to make sure that those who are curious have that harm reduction education and just know how to offer it in a safe, consensual way that's with reverence to the medicine. So they could either look up, so my alias is the Dharmacist, which is, you know, like, instead of the pharmacist is Dharmacist with a D. And if they're interested in toad school, I'm trying to figure out a way that if there's enough people interested, I'd be like, yeah, I'll go there. I'd love to go visit places around North America, if not the world. So it's toad.school. And yeah, my little family and I, we just kind of go everywhere where it's needed, because this is our mission in life now, is to share this 4+ experience with as many people as we can to see what we can do in our lifetime. I really do think that.
And I will say too, right? Like I went to your toad school in Toronto. It was awesome. I liked the organizational structure of it. I like how you put it together, and you really did cover every aspect of facilitating this medicine and any type of concerns. Like it was very well done, and I appreciated how it was done. And the following day, it was the people facilitating, and so everyone could actually experience 5-MeO-DMT, which I think is, again, extremely important to be able to experience in a safe environment.
Yeah, and it's creating community.
And so it was, you said,
so important.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I had some like really amazing contacts, even just being at the toad school in Toronto, like some really interesting people. And sorry, it was like, so www.toad.school.com would be how people reach this.
.com. You know, we've got interesting site aliases now. I don't know what you call them, but yeah, it's just www.toad.school. And it's the dharnassist.com, which I'm going to find out a way to just... Yeah, if there's a group of people who are interested, I happily come to them. So I'm going to figure that out.
Well, we will include this in the description on the podcast so that if anyone is curious, they can find the links to your web pages and to you specifically. Because again, you being, you know, like literally a doctorate pharmacist and specializing specifically within psychedelics, like it's...
I don't think there's anybody safer, be honest.
So, you know, if someone has concerns about I'm on, you know, these group of medications, is it safe for me to engage in some psychedelic, whether that's mescaline, MDMA, psilocybin, LSD, 5-MeO-DMT, whatever. I think that's a really important thing, is to go into the experience knowing that you're safe with the medications you're on. Or if there is an interaction, how long to be off it, to allow a safe transition to that psychedelic space, which I think is really important. And I can't even stress enough how important it is to have people like you around that people can contact and talk to about these things.
If there's anyone else who's a medical professional, it's one of those things, or anyone who just has, just curious, I would love to just have more people on board. I'm also trying to figure out how to train more people, but they're also like, I have a colleague who who does a lot of programs to train too. So there's a few of us out there, and I hope we're going to get more.
Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic what you're doing. And again, Toad School is amazing. I learned a lot from it. I thought it was a really inclusive program that covered pretty much every aspect of what I wanted to understand about 5-MeO-DMT. And yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think 5-MeO-DMT is the conclusion of any psychedelic journey of our life, our existence. It's a profound substance, and you know, it should be handled with some degree of reverence and responsibility. And I think Toad School itself is a very excellent way to teach people how to facilitate this and how to understand how to use it. So thank you for that. And I appreciate your time today. I think it was an awesome conversation. And again, we'll talk soon, as we generally do. And enjoy
much.
Costa Rica.
I really enjoy it. Like, I mean, I could talk to you for hours. So yeah, thank you so much for helping me just share more about, you know, safety and this molecule. And yeah, once again, let's see what we can do in this lifetime to affect the next 7 generations.
All right. Thank you, Trina.
Ciao.